It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We turn to Wisconsin Public Radio's politics team for updates and to field your questions about the two-year budget. Call in along the way at 800-642-1234. Conversation is here at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anya Van Wagtendonk is WPR's State Capitol Reporter. Anya, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. And Sean Johnson is here, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. Hi there, Sean.
Hi, Kate.
Well, Sean, let's start with you. And as we begin with the latest on the vision for shared revenue, Assembly Republicans are urging a plan to change how the state provides funding to local governments. What are in the plans?
I guess we'll start with the broad strokes because that's kind of what we know right now. They described it as a work in progress. We don't have an actual paper copy of the plan yet, but we do know that they're talking about spending 20% of all the state's sales tax revenue on local governments, you know, on what we now refer to as shared revenue. And so that is a substantial amount of money. It's the same share of money that Governor Tony Evers talked about in his proposed budget. So there are going to be differences between the plan that Republicans roll out and the one that Governor Tony Evers called for, but they are together on that threshold there. And that's a substantial amount of money going to local governments in this budget. You do see some differences start to emerge, though, between the plan Republicans are talking about and the governor's. They're saying that every community is going to get a 10% increase in state funding. That'll be kind of the floor here. But they are changing the formula in ways we don't exactly know right now that would prioritize where the money goes. And it sounded like potentially a shift a little bit away from cities and more toward towns and villages. And then there's going to be some more restrictions on the money under their plan.
And to that end, those restrictions, what limits could be placed on how local governments are able to spend the money?
The way that they described it is that the new funding that communities are going to get as part of this budget, about $227 million in this budget, would go toward core services, as they described it. And those would be law enforcement, fire protection, emergency medical services, emergency response, communications, public works, transportation. It would have to go toward that stuff. You know, communities couldn't use it for other expenses. And then there would be certain expenses that would be just flat out banned from, you know, having it used there. So the broad strokes are the same as the governor, but they're more prescriptive in terms of what this money could go toward.
What about Milwaukee? What about Milwaukee County and increasing local sales taxes?
So pretty substantial development there. The plan that Assembly Republicans have agreed to in principle here would let the city of Milwaukee institute a 2% sales tax and would let Milwaukee County increase its sales tax by 0.375% on top of the half percent sales tax that the county has right now. And they would be able to use that money to retire pension debt. You know, this is not a done deal. Senate Republicans came out with a statement saying they're still working on it, that they've had good progress, but it's not like this is past the legislature. But that's a pretty significant initiative that was rolled out by the mayor of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County's executive, and Speaker Voss, among others, at a press conference. So they're very much on the same page there. The flip side of that Milwaukee money is, well, one, it would have to be approved by voters in a referendum first before these sales taxes could go into effect. Also, there'd be more restrictions. You know, there's no revenue allowed for the Milwaukee streetcar, for example. Milwaukee Public Schools, which was reported by Wispolitics, is that Milwaukee Public School District would have to have school resource officers present.
So there could be quite a few strings attached there. I just want to turn to Anya here. You know, we're looking at this historic projected state surplus. How are Republicans and Democrats talking about their goals for the surplus?
They have very different goals for the surplus. In his budget, Governor Evers proposed a good amount of one-time spending. He's framing this as this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to invest in projects like broadband expansion, but then also to do things like pay down part of the state debt, grow the state's rainy day fund. And he's also proposed an income tax cut for middle-class families and other changes to the tax code, like tax credits for seniors and needy families. Really framing it as this opportunity to spend down quite a bit of that surplus. Republicans also want tax cuts, but they want them for pretty much all Wisconsinites, regardless of income. So they've been pushing for a flat income tax that they say will attract more high earners to the state. And in general, they are also just much more cautious about spending that surplus. They actually don't necessarily agree with projections that it'll be in that $5 to $7 billion range. And because so much of it is the result of federal COVID dollars, sort of one-time amounts of money that Wisconsin is not going to see again for a while, they're cautious about spending down too much of it all at once.
We have WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk and Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson here helping us understand the priorities of the legislature at this point in the budget writing process. Join in with questions, 800-642-1234. You're listening to the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting updates from Wisconsin Public Radio's Politics Brain Trust, Sean Johnson and Anya Van Wagtendonk. Call in with your questions, your thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. And so, Sean, I want to turn to the budget. We've seen the legislature's budget committee set to start voting on the two-year state budget plan. What could roll out this week?
It's going to get started with one vote that is, simultaneously nonchalant and monumental. And what I mean by that is that they are going to, the legislature's budget committee, controlled by Republicans, is going to put more than 500 items from the governor's budget into a single vote. They're going to say, we're taking all of these out of the budget right now, right at once. So, you know, you've heard about the governor's budget. It included provisions for establishing paid family leave in Wisconsin. That'll be gone. Legalization of marijuana. That'll be gone. Full Medicaid expansion, automatic voter registration, plan for the keeping the brewers in Milwaukee, freezing enrollment in voucher schools, limiting a tax credit for manufacturers. That will all be taken out in this one budget motion that they're going to pass to start the Joint Finance Committee's deliberations here over the next month. So one fell swoop. It is really one fell swoop.
Okay. And how does it compare to perhaps last budget in terms of taking things out?
It is something that was, I mean, the first time they did it in 2019, it was somewhat shocking because you hadn't seen a legislature take a vote like that on a governor's budget before. They did it again in 2021. So this year, it was to be expected. You could kind of set your clocks to it. It is bigger than before. I mean, you're talking about more than 500 items. It was like fewer than 400, I think, the last time around. So there's more coming out all at once. But a lot of the big budget decisions are still yet to be made.
And when will Joint Finance likely vote on bigger parts of the budget, like education, corrections, healthcare?
I think they're going to have a busy May. And okay. Just looking at like education, again, they've been fairly predictable on that. Looking at the 2019, they did it in May 23rd, a couple of years ago, May 27th. So they have sort of this rhythm with the governor, even though they don't really talk all that much and don't agree on very much. Republicans kind of do their things at their schedule. He kind of does his on his schedule. Mm-hmm. And, there's like a dysfunctional function to the whole process.
Anya, turning to you and talking about the help wanted signs, the state workforce, we saw the assembly passed a package of Republican authored bills that would add work requirements to recipients of public health insurance and unemployment insurance. Why do Republicans support these requirements?
Yeah, the unemployment rate in Wisconsin right now is at a historic low. It's about 2.5%. And at the same time, as you mentioned, there are help wanted signs all across the state. There's a labor shortage. So Republicans argue that anybody who can be working right now should be working. And they say that changes to the unemployment insurance program will help make that happen.
How are Democrats responding?
They do not agree with that argument. They say that there are other reasons why people who can work don't or are not in the workforce right now. Particularly, they say that people face barriers like lack of access to childcare and transportation. And they say that's where legislators should be focusing their attention and energies. They also, you know, argue that these proposed changes to these public programs will really just kind of make it harder for low-income people to access support rather than motivating people to get jobs.
So why go through the process? I mean, if Evers has vetoed similar bills before, why send bills to the governor that he will likely veto?
Yeah, Republican lawmakers say that the results of this referendum from this past April signal support from voters for these types of changes to public programs. Speaker Voss told reporters before these bills went for debate that there should be bipartisan support. He was expecting bipartisan support because of the outcome of that referendum. And he said, you know, it was an opportunity for Governor Evers to put one of his favorite sayings into practice, which is that the will of the people is the law of the land. There was absolutely no bipartisan support for those bills. They were passed on completely party lines. Democrats say, you know, that the outcome of a referendum in an April election in a non-presidential year doesn't actually tell us what the electorate thinks of these changes, and that the wording of the referendum really can't be applied much more broadly to such a range of public programs from, you know, public health insurance to unemployment insurance, which is not a benefit, it's an insurance program.
Pausing there with Anya Van Wagtendonk and Sean Johnson, you're listening to the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Wisconsin Public Radio's state politics team, Sean Johnson and Anya Van Wagtendonk, to help us understand legislative priorities and what's going on in the budget writing process as it hits a final phase. Call in with your questions along the way at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anya, let's look at the Republican-backed legislation seeking to block local bans on gas-powered cars or appliances. What is going on with this legislation? Why are Republicans trying to prevent these bans?
Yeah, a number of states, most notably California, have plans to limit the sale of gas-powered cars over the next few years and decade. Some municipalities also have their own versions of these plans, and the idea is to transition to more energy-efficient forms of vehicles, as well as appliances like ovens. Wisconsin is not one of those states. Governor Evers has said that he doesn't think a ban on gas cars would be good policy. Instead, he's called for more incentives to promote the transition to electric and other forms of appliances and vehicles. He's also called for an expansion of the state's electric grid that would promote that as well. But the GOP says it's being proactive in banning any kind of ban based on fuel source. They say that the Wisconsin grid just isn't ready for an influx of electric vehicles. And of course, you know, the sort of classic Republican argument that the market should decide what types of cars consumers should be buying. So consumers can decide whether they want to make that transition or not. And so they just don't want the government meddling in the market and pass this bill saying so.
Okay. So I hear Republicans and Democrats not on the same page for that legislation. Sean, let's look at guaranteed income. Another bill here would block local communities from using public money to run these guaranteed income programs. Why do Republicans want to prevent such a thing from happening?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you're talking about guaranteed income, this is where residents get recurring payments. And unlike other government subsidies, those payments are not restricted to specific uses like rent or food. So just straight payments to people who live there. Right now, Madison's the only city with a guaranteed income program in Wisconsin. It's a pilot project, mm-hmm. and it is privately funded. So it would not be affected by this ban, which is a ban on public money. But when you hear Republicans talk about why they want these bans, they feel like these guaranteed income projects run contrary to, I guess, really everything that the state has done under, you know, what Tommy Thompson called welfare reform in the 1990s on up till now, where they've just had real push to kind of restrict public benefits or tie them to, you know, work requirements like we talked about in the previous segment. So they view this as contrary to that. But, you know, whether or not this passes, becomes law, it wouldn't affect any communities in Wisconsin right now.
I was going to say, because are there other cities in Wisconsin that are ready to launch that this type of legislation would impact?
There has been some talk about it in other communities. I know Milwaukee has talked about it a little bit. So it's something that could be out there. It's just right now you're looking at it's only in Madison, and it's 155 families in Madison, and it's privately funded. So it's limited at the moment.
Anya, turning back to you here on public records, a bipartisan bill in the legislature seeking to help people get access to government records. This bill would undo a state Supreme Court ruling that narrows when people may recover legal fees in lawsuits seeking access to public records. Why is this legislation receiving traction and bipartisan support?
Without getting too in the weeds, basically what the Supreme Court decision from last summer decided is that if a person or group has to sue in order to get the public records that they've requested, they can only get their legal fees covered if a judge mandates the release of those records. So if the records come out at some other point in the lawsuit, a person could still be on the hook for legal fees. And so a number of critics across party lines have said that this will make it harder for people to access public records and could really kind of incentivize government bodies that don't want to release certain public records to stall, hoping that this will go to a court case that a person can't afford to follow through on. And so what's interesting is that this was a court case decided by the state's conservative majority, impassioned dissent from the liberal justices, but this bill, which would effectively undo the outcome of that case, was authored by Republicans. It has bipartisan support in the legislature, and then also support from outside groups, including the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, the ACLU, free press advocates, open government advocates, professional groups that represent journalists like us. And so it's all sort of the public argument that all these groups are making is that this is an opportunity to increase transparency and government accountability. It's also worth noting, of course, that every political party uses public records to promote their agendas and find opposition research. And so presumably everybody is kind of motivated by this idea that what is good for the public goose is also good for the political gander.
It's a moment, too, when you really see the nature of checks and balances in action, if you will, if the legislature is taking action here on something that the Supreme Court has ruled on.
That's right. And I think it's an interesting, you know, as we are moving towards a Supreme Court that's going to have a different makeup starting in the fall when it will swing to a liberal majority, there's a lot of conversation about how the legislature and the court interact with one another. And this is an interesting case where the legislature really saw, you know, this decision come down and came up with what it sees as a solution to, again, what it sees as a bad ruling. And so we see that interaction between these two bodies and how they kind of interplay in that way.
We're getting up to speed on Wisconsin state politics with State Capitol reporter Anya Van Wagtendonk and Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson at our side. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Sean, turning to school crime now, under a Republican plan, schools will be required to report incidents of violence on annual report cards to the state, and schools with repeated criminal incidents would be required to hire police officers. What is the reaction to this legislation?
I think this is another one of those that has, you know, in the legislature anyway, broken along very predictable party lines, where you have Republicans saying we want to make sure that there are police or school resource officers in schools like Milwaukee and Madison. And, you know, Democrats, particularly lawmakers that represent those cities, saying, hey, wait, I think that our local schools should be able to make decisions for themselves and, you know, butt out. Basically, this is a decision that we made at the local level, and it's not for the state to step in and overturn that. So, you know, I think it's another example, too, of where Republicans, as and this has been kind of an ongoing theme, where they want more control over decisions that are made at the local level, you know, and particularly as the budget comes along and they talk about giving more money to potentially local school districts or local governments, they are attaching more strings to that funding.
Some schools had backed away from having resource officers or police officers on school grounds after the killing of George Floyd in 2020. Do you see as this a swing back? Are Republicans seeking to return of officers to school campuses?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much, I think, geared toward Milwaukee and Madison, who took those steps after, you know, in the summer of 2020 during the protests after the killing of George Floyd. They took those steps in response to community activists saying they, you know, felt no safer because of having the officers in the school. And this is an effort by Republicans to swing back and require them. They would, though, need the approval of Governor Tony Evers for any of this stuff, as with anything in state government right now. And, I mean, you know, I'm not sure the governor is where he is on these issues, given the party line votes in the legislature.
In our last moments here, Sean, what are you watching for in a really busy time in the Capitol as the budget comes together and a lot of bills swirling around?
I think this month you're just going to see, we've been talking for a while about what Republicans want in the budget. We know that they don't get like the governor's budget. You are probably going to have a pretty good idea after, you know, about a month from now, you'll have a pretty good idea of what the Republican alternative is when it comes to how much they spend on schools, how much they cut taxes, what comes out, what stays in. They're going to be building the budget this month in the Joint Finance Committee. And so that's what we'll be watching.
And, you know, public hearings just wrapped up. How much of those, what is said at public hearings, end up in influencing the budget? What is the public hearing place in the budget process?
On the whole, I would say the public hearings don't have a huge role in the process. I mean, people go to these things and they're limited to 2 minutes apiece to testify. It does seem like every budget cycle, though, there is like one or two issues where you have kind of organized, you know, opposition or proponents for something in the budget. They show up at these hearings in droves. They get their point across, and sometimes they get people's attention. So it's kind of around the edges. It might be a small issue that you hadn't thought about much. They do have an impact, but on the whole, though, I would say that they are not what's kind of driving the decisions for this budget in this legislature.
Sean and Anya, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. Anya Van Wagtendonk is WPR's State Capitol Reporter. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.